The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 158 for June 30th, 2008. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton. That's John Braun. Hi, John. How are you?
Fantastic.
Lantastic. Remember that?
No.
Oh, good. Thank goodness, because that was a horrible thing to have to deal with, networking stuff. Anyway, we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. We're trying to pack in everything that we've got here because I'm going to be on vacation next week and we're not going to be able to squeeze a show in. The latency from the satellite connection on the lake, which some of you may remember me talking about last year, is about a 1,000 milliseconds, almost a second. So we have some follow-ups from last week, some new stuff. And, John, you went to a show this week, is that right?
I went to, and they have a couple of these every year in the city, or New York City.
Okay.
If you don't know what. Well, no, I found that's a relative term, depending on where you are.
It is.
Anyways. So the one show, Digital Experience, is put on by Pepcom, and it's just a little press gathering, which is very convenient. You know, hopped on the train, went in, actually walked to the event. But it's not Mac specific, but it's a good survey of the digital space here. And there were a lot of companies there. And there were four things I'm going to mention that just caught my eye.
Okay.
So go over those real quick. And we may talk about some others in the future. I'm still going through the press kit and the bag of goodies and all that stuff there. They actually had a jungle theme. So they had some, you know, wild animals, all sorts of monkeys all over the place, which who doesn't love monkeys?
And everybody loves monkey. Haven't you always wanted a monkey?
Yeah, and I actually got some. So I went with one of my Hawaiian shirts and then I got some necklaces and stuff like that. So I fit right in. Anyway.
Wow. So they actually, wait a minute, hang on. For any of you that have seen John at Macworld Expo, you know that he, often likes to wear, I'm not going to say always, but often likes to wear Hawaiian shirts. So you're telling me that they actually built a trade show with you in mind?
You know, I think they did.
All right. So what'd you find? What'd you see?
Okay. So one, and you may remember these folks, iFi.
They won a TMO Editor's Choice Award earlier this year.
Yes, a very slick little Wi-Fi, you know, Wi-Fi. It makes your digital camera a Wi-Fi device and you can upload wirelessly, which is pretty darn cool.
Yep.
So you don't need a camera. You just need this little card. Well, I'm glad to say that they are not, you know, just sitting around doing nothing. They released and actually I think they announced it, you know, several weeks ago, but they were showing it here and it's called iFi Explore. So it's costs a little more than it's $129 retail.
Okay.
So a little more than the base device, but the one thing it does, so it does a number of things, but the coolest thing is it does what's known as geotagging. And from what they told me, it's very similar to the Wi-Fi method that I think the iPhone used to use, which is basically if you're near a Wi-Fi station and it's registered with the service, I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but there's a database out there that knows about a lot of Wi-Fi access points. So being able to geotag, because the piece of software, and I think they actually got an award also is Memory Miner, if you remember this. It was a piece of software that let you arrange your pictures, but one thing you could arrange by was the location.
Right.
Now, of course, having a card that can location stamp, if you will, or geocode, or geotag, I guess is the term, that's just so darn cool. So that really caught my eye, and I was very excited. They also have a couple of other products that they're rolling out. So they're growing the product line. I think it's great.
Interesting.
Kodak had so multi-touch and touch screens really seem to be taking off. So Kodak showed both some cameras that have touch screen, and one of the demos I was given, it was very compelling in that, you know, the way to review your photos on your camera, use your fingers to swipe back and forth, it was just very, very cool. And hopefully they avoided any patent issues with Apple. And also digital picture frames are now starting to go where they have a touch screen of some sort on the front. Kodak and others were showing that. Another thing, new bunch here, it's Viewzy, V-I-E-W-Z-I, and it's a different way of searching the web. I'd say it's graphical. Just give it a shot. You may like it, you may not.
Give me an example. How does it work?
I mean, you type in a term and it'll show you different views, almost like they're plugins. So there may be a picture view specific to pictures. So it's just in a lot more rich and interactive than like Google, for example, where you see it, but it's an HTML page. So I'm sure they're using Flash and a number of other technologies.
Interesting.
But they showed me another where, you know, it show you a collection of books that match the title, and maybe through, Amazon, you can purchase the book. So, all I'll say just cause the brief demo I was given, it seemed pretty neat. It's a very visually rich, search engine.
I'm trying to use it here while you're talking, and it's strange. It keeps coming up with the weather no matter what I type in now.
But,
it's because I need to start a new search. Okay. Oh, I see. You've got shopping view and video view and site view and photo view.
I think there was a book view. So it looks like I have some sort of plugin architecture that makes what you see married to the type of media or topic or whatever. So
got it.
See what I'm saying? Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, you're right.
But it just caught my eye.
Yeah. So you've got this kind of scrolling view of different ways of searching for that information, similar to how Google has, you can search just the web or in general, or pictures or video or news or deals. Google has that. This is kind of that concept taken to the next level, I would say. And that, but you know, it's much simpler. Just get down in front of your computer and try it. Viewzy, V-I-E-W-Z-I. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then our pals at TiVo were there.
Okay.
Always good to see them. They were showing their latest products. And I guess the thing that they're, I don't think it's a secret, otherwise we wouldn't tell. Well, we can tell just you, but don't tell anybody else. But I guess they're going to be rolling out Disney movies shortly.
Oh.
Or I guess through the TiVo device, you can buy Disney movies, skipping those other people.
Bypassing Amazon?
I'm not sure if they're going to offer it through, if it's directly with Disney or through someone like Amazon. Oh. I'm thinking it may be a Disney deal.
Did they say anything? My lone complaint with the Amazon downloads, well, not my lone, but my main, is that it's standard def video and stereo sound. Did they say anything about the Disney movies? Are they going to just be that or no?
Not that I heard.
Okay. All right.
I'll write them though, because and then they're, so that was it. Very quickly, digital experience. That's one thing new, another new thing. Yeah, we may just blow past this, but Office and Mac OS X both had updates come out recently.
Yeah, the Mac OS X update came out. I noticed it when I sat down to do the podcast tonight. I was not at my desk this afternoon, but seems like there's a couple of interesting things, but we'll wait till the next show and talk about any issues that people are having.
If your system's still working, then we'd love to hear from you.
That's right. Bunch of iCal
fixes. System's not working, I don't know how you get in touch with us. So
they can call us. And this is a great opportunity to tell them just how to do that. So we have a phone number. It's 206-666-GEEK. And that is, John?
4335.
That's right. And you can email to feedback@macgeekgab.com. You can Skype to MacGeekGab. You can follow me on Twitter, though I don't plan to be using Twitter much on vacation, but that's just twitter.com/Dave Hamilton, right? I think. Yes. Yeah.
Something like that.
All right. Yeah. All right. That's how you find us, folks. Do you need more? Are there more ways that they need to find us, John?
No.
Okay, good. So last week we were talking about replacements for the eyesight, and very interestingly, the next morning, Logitech announced their this webcam that they've come out with that does exactly what the listener was looking for. It totally replaces the eyesight. It's a USB camera, but it's kind of sort of HD. It's I think what 1600 by 720. So
16 by 12.
16 by 12. So it'd be 1200 by 720. I think is what the resolution is. Is that right?
Yeah, I got the page up here.
Okay.
So and it's a big boy. It's got a, for people to get into this sort of thing, which I've kind of been doing as of late, it has a Carl Zeiss lens.
Yep.
Which apparently is a big deal in the lens world.
Better. Sorry, 960 by 720 is the resolution. It'll do 30 frames a second, and it's got its own microphone built in. They say it works out of the box with iChat. That's iChat and Skype for those of you that like things to be expanded and not condensed.
Okay. And actually, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't look closely on the webpage. There's a little asterisk next to the claim of 16 by 12.
Hmm.
A lot of people do this. They extrapolate out from
That's right. Of course they do.
The resolution of the
that's 4x3 to you and me.
Yeah. But yeah. But yeah, it looks like a pretty slick camera.
Yep. Absolutely. And pretty much a perfect replacement for the EyeSight. And why do we need to replace the EyeSight? Well, Dave wrote in and indicated, actually more than Dave, there were a couple, Saeed wrote in as well. I think there were a couple of others. The EyeSight apparently contained some environmentally hazardous materials, so it became illegal to sell it in Europe, and they simply stopped selling it everywhere. And we found an article about this. John, I don't remember, did the article say what it was in the EyeSight? Was it just lead or something like
man.
That?
Oh, it's just a whole bunch of good stuff here. So this is just, you know, if you're into chemistry, this is cool. So ROS is restriction of use of certain hazardous substances and electrical, blah, blah, blah. But anyways, it limits the amounts of lead, which is nasty, cadmium, which is nasty, mercury, but then also hexavalent chromium, polybrominated biphenyl, and polybrominated diphenyl ether flame retardants. Whew. Glad I took chemistry. I think I got that right. So anyways,
do you feel better after saying that?
So basically and it's an effort. I mean, you found an article, Dave, where I guess companies, including my day job, we've had to spend a lot of money because I guess it's easy to, some lead and stuff like that is, something that you can use. But once you toss it in a landfill, it's bad news. So
bad news. That's right. So if you have an EyeSight, keep it forever. Don't ever throw it away. What would be the appropriate way to dispose of something like that? Do you have any idea, John?
It depends on the city that you're in, or like actually the town that I'm in, for example. They just have a general computer electronics pile. If it's something small, you just drop, but you put in a special bin, and then allegedly it goes to a place where they strip it and they pull out the metals and,
that just
get
goes,
rid of things in it.
They just bury that under the rest of the trash in the landfill so nobody finds it. Is that right?
Of course not.
Okay, good. Let's hope.
Yeah,
not.
So they have a pile of, especially, tubes. I still have one that I'm going to bring someday that died on me. But especially, CRTs and stuff.
Yep.
Nasty stuff.
Our town actually has a place where you can bring things, like if you have old, like big batteries, like batteries from the little UPSs that you have to power your computer when the power's out. Those are not supposed to just be thrown away, and you can bring those to the town. So I wonder if I could bring them.
So for all the tree huggers out there, actually, and I know Apple has an environmental section of their site. I do believe, do they still do this? I think they do. If you buy a new machine, they will, I think, for free reprocess your old machine.
I'm pretty sure that's correct. Yep. Yep. Go ahead. Are we done? Okay. Our first sponsor for the show is Yazsoft with Speed Download 5. The idea behind Speed Download is it's a browser plugin that works with, I believe, Safari, Firefox, and perhaps others, allowing for turbocharged downloads and auto resuming downloads. So if you start a big thing downloading and then you have to stop, as long as the server supports it, Speed Download will pull it down. It's also got a built-in FTP client. And it's got encrypted file sharing. So if I wanted to send a file to John, John could fire up Speed Download, let me navigate through, find what I want in the places that he allows me to look, of course. And then we can send it to one another over the internet, encrypted, good to go. It's got full iDisk integration, meaning you can copy stuff to and from your iDisk and download things. No problem. It's got a great little progress bar that shows all sorts of information. You can reveal in the Finder, you can resume, you can customize the background. And you've got a bandwidth throttle in it, too. So if you've got a big, long download or upload, you can throttle the bandwidth back so it's not using the full capabilities of your connection and giving you room to do other things without totally soaking your bandwidth. It's $25. And, of course, a demo is available at Yazsoft. That's YAZSOFT.com. And with that, we move on to Dusty, and I hope we can help him.
Hey, John, Dave, you guys rock. I've been listening to you since, maybe episode 30. This is Dusty from PA. I got a desperate problem. I have a 20-inch iMac G5, a 2.1 gigahertz power PC chip with the built-in EyeSight. I currently have 2.5 gigs of RAM in it, and it's running Tiger. But the 512 megabyte onboard logic board RAM, the RAM that's actually soldered to the logic board, is bad. I confirmed this with some hardware tests from the startup disk, and I also had an Apple Genius confirm this. They're telling me it's $900 to replace the logic board, that I can't just replace that RAM. What I want to know is if anybody knows, if you can unsolder that RAM and just use the extra 2 gig bay that's available, and will the computer boot up then, and I can load in Tiger again because I've wiped the hard drive, or you know, am I out of luck and have to buy a new logic board? Can't wait to hear the answer. I won't even leave my name and email address because you'll just cut me off. See ya. Bye.
This is an interesting one, John. You want to start here?
Poor Dusty. Poor Dusty. So I would say, yeah, he was thinking he's out of luck. And I'll talk a little bit in general about how, you know, motherboards and stuff are architected, which, you know, there's so many of them. So I, you know, couldn't get the tech manual. That would be the first thing I try to do. But, you know, Apple tends to not like those floating around out there. So whether there is a magic jumper, I mean, trying to desolder the RAM is adventurous. I doubt it would work because, well, it depends on how they deal with memory. And there's usually a chip somewhere that handles interacting with memory, either on board or in the, you know, in the memory expansion slots. It may be smart enough to say, oh, look, the RAM on the motherboard is gone. Let me go to the slot. But, you know, just desoldering a surface mount chip is not something to be taken lightly.
That's not a trivial task. No.
That's rough work. I mean, I've done some basic soldering. I've worked with some techs that have. I mean, you can get the right tools that will desolder a chip and lift it off properly. But that gets dangerous. And then the damage may not necessarily be the memory. I mean, it could be things down the line. But the test is identifying something that is preventing it from seeing memory, whether it's the memory itself or something else. It could be anywhere. It could be a cracked, you know, trace on the. So even if you pull the RAM out of there. Now, you and I have both seen, Dave, that there are a number of places, and maybe you want to pick it up here, but there are a number of places where you can either get the parts or they can, you know, give it a shot that aren't Apple.
Yeah. So, and I've worked with a couple of these. The one that I work with most frequently is Tech Restore at techrestore.com. They really are one of the, and to me, the premier, but there are others. Mac Rescue is one. Kind of the places that you go when you don't have AppleCare and you need something like this. They have ways of getting this stuff a little bit cheaper, or at least ways of selling it a little bit cheaper. Getting a new motherboard is not cheap for anyone, but that might be one place to check. The other thing, to jump back to the geeky conversation, is, and I don't know the answer here, but like you said, you know, maybe there's some jumper on the motherboard that could be snipped that says ignore the RAM here. If that's there, that's beautiful. My guess is it's probably not, but it's certainly worth investigating. I know in the old days, that's kind of, you know, a jumper or something that you could cut that would just bypass it forever. Otherwise, buy a new motherboard. And these places are the places I go to. So.
Yeah, I found couple of more things. So I think it's Shreve Systems.
Oh, yeah.
S-H-R-E-V-E.
Yep.
And they've been around for years, and they tend to specialize in, you know, older Mac hardware. I don't think they sell components, but for example, I just popped on the site real quick, and they have 17-inch G5 iMacs for about $600. So you can get a whole new machine of the same class for $600. Well, I think his had a larger screen, but... But check these guys out. And then, of course, Apple always has their, you know, it's specials usually on the bottom of the Apple Store page of,
yep.
You know, the refurbished and all that. And you may get a deal. So I'd say you probably want to, you know, I don't know. I'd throw in the towel and get another machine.
If $900 is the price, I know that for, I think it's $950, you can replace that with a 20-inch Intel iMac. And obviously there's plenty of benefits to doing that, including getting effectively a brand new machine. The refurbs.
Yeah, funny how that dollar figure is so close to that of a new machine.
That's something. Yeah. Interesting. all right. We moving on to another problem with another iMac.
Hey, John and Dave. Love the show. Thanks for all your great Mac advice. I've got a problem. I'm trying to scavenge some data off of a drive from a 17-inch iMac that stopped booting recently. I just get the flashing question mark folder. I know that this means that the boot drive cannot be found, or the system files cannot be found to boot the system. After running numerous tests with Disk Warrior, Tech Tool Pro, and the failed attempt at using Apple's own disk utility from the OS X installed DVD, I know that, among other things, there is severe directory damage, and all tries at correcting the damage or extracting data, primarily the irreplaceable family photos, from the drive have failed. Of course, there is no backup, and so I'm in a bit of a rut. Do you have any other ideas of software or tactics that I can try to salvage the data? I can rip out the drive and run it as an external disk on another Windows, Mac, or Linux machine if necessary. Any ideas would be greatly appreciated. Thanks a lot. Love the show. Bye-bye.
Ooh. Oh, I hate when that happens.
Not good.
A couple of tools I could suggest here would be, pretty timely here. Drive Genius 2 and Data Rescue 2 just came out with some nice, and I think I'd focus on Data Rescue 2 in this case.
Yep.
I think it's pretty good at poking around on a drive and kind of making sense out of stuff that otherwise would not make sense. And I believe they still have a mode where it kind of, you know, gives you a heads up saying, okay, well, this is what I think I can do. So,
yep.
I think if you get the demo, so, that would be the first thing, I would try on the software side.
Definitely. I would Data Rescue 2 is the first thing I wrote down when I heard this. Pilot Pete points out that on the Windows side is a utility called SpinWrite, which does work with Mac drives. I think it's about $90, and it will, I've known other people that have used this utility. It pulls just about anything off of any drive. It's really, really, really low level. It's called it's at grc.com, and it's called SpinWrite. Again, it only runs on a Windows machine. I've heard rumors of a Mac version in development. I honestly don't know how it compares to Data Rescue 2 because I've never done a side-by-side on them. So I'd certainly try Data Rescue 2 because that's on a Mac. But if you need it and you want to try the software route, then that's it. Otherwise, there's the ship it
the
off.
The big guns.
The big guns. For big money, you can almost certainly get your data back. Places like Drive Savers and Total Recall, you're looking at certainly more than $500 and many times well into the thousands to have data recovered off a drive, but they're about 99.9% successful. So
yeah, depends, I think, on how important. Because I've steered some colleagues to them, and I think they charge based on the capacity of the drive, which I guess, you know, is proportional to their effort.
Right.
I think they'll even try floppies. I had someone try that once. So, yeah, but hey, if you need it,
if you need it,
oh, thank goodness for Time Machine and Time Capsule.
And yeah, I certainly don't want to, say I told you so or anything like that, but this is
certainly not
yet another example of why backing up is so, so important. It's so cheap to buy. I mean, think about this, right? For a couple $100, you can buy a drive that would hold many iterations of your family's photos. And especially with Time Machine, with Leopard, you don't have to think about it. And, you know, John and I don't just wave Apple's flag for no good reason, but this is a fantastic reason to wave Apple's flag. So really,
somebody's
really
flag
consider.
Before disaster strikes.
Yeah, somebody's flag.
Because it will strike.
It's not if, it's when. That's right.
How gloomy. Okay, let's...
All right, let's talk about something geeky.
Hey, John, Dave. It is William from South Africa again. Got a quick question for you. I've got a Western Digital MyStudio hard drive external storage device. Now, the device itself has got three ports on. It's got eSATA, or eSATA, as you call it. It's got FireWire 800, FireWire 400, and USB. Out of those ports, I assume the eSATA would be the quickest. However, here's a question for you, and this is where my problem comes in. I've got a MacBook Pro 2.16, which has got fully loaded with 4 gigs of RAM, etc. When I run USB, or whether I run FireWire 400, or whether I run FireWire 800, I see no speed improvement on any of those ports, and yet FireWire 800 is supposed to be the fastest of the lot because the MacBook Pro, as you know, doesn't support eSATA. So my question to you is, which of those should be the fastest? I assume it's FireWire 800. And if it's the same speed as all the other input devices on my MacBook Pro, is there any way of speeding it up? Could there be anything that could be slowing it down? That's my question. My email address...
Okay. All right. So there's a couple of things to talk about here, John, but the obvious thing, or at least the thing that jumps out to me, is yes, the buses all go different speeds, and there are certain buses that go faster than others, but we need to look for the weakest link in the chain. And my guess is that the drive that's inside the enclosure is slower than the slowest interface available on that particular enclosure. And so you just, no matter how fast the bus is, the drive simply isn't going to be made faster simply because it's going through a faster bus. That's one obvious answer here to me anyway. Does that kind of jive with?
I concur. I was going to say that the drive is a dog.
Could be.
It's slow. It's probably either, and you know, drives, you know, start off not as dogs and then they turn into dogs, but it may have a small cache. It may have a small, you know, just so the very basic figure is the speed at which the data can come off of the drive platter and get to the bus. There's a maximum. And it's probably a good thing that the way things are designed is that that speed is always or always should be less than the speed of the bus, because the bus can be doing other things, not just transferring your data. So, you know, it may be in the tens of megabytes per second that it can transfer data, the drive itself, but the bus is much faster. But that's good because the bus should not be saturated with always thrown around drive traffic. You know, it should be faster. So that's a good thing. So, I mean, and he proved that by using different interfaces, the bottleneck, as it were, is the drive itself. So, hey, if you pop another drive in there, it may do better.
That's right.
Find the model number through a system profiler or something like that. See if there's a bigger one, either with a bigger cache, better RPMs, stuff like that. And I think you will see the drive transfer speed increase. It's kind of confusing because you would think the bus speed is the speed at which things should work.
All right. So that's the, I know we agree here. That is, there's a 95 or perhaps even better percent chance that that's what the problem is. However, it could be one of two other things that come to mind. One is the controller board inside the drive enclosure itself. There could be some bottleneck between the drive and the interface, right? It's possible. Highly unlikely that some company, especially a company like LaCie, I think that's who he said this was with the MyBook, highly unlikely that they'd use a bad chipset or a slow chipset to do that. The other is, what about the Mac? Now, in theory, FireWire shouldn't cause any noticeable load on the system, but it depends on what you're doing with the data. If you're pulling that data in, let's say, and converting, let's say it's an audio stream or a video stream, and you're converting it from one format to another, well, perhaps your Mac is running at full tilt and can't pull the data in any faster. So, you know, that could be it. I don't know what you're doing with it. Drive Genius is a fantastic utility to test that with. It's got all sorts of different drive benchmarking. And that would be one way to kind of rule out whatever application it is or what have you. So,
yeah. And another thing, or at least I've come across this in the camera world, is that I think in general, even if the claim speed is the same, FireWire is typically faster with sustained transfers than USB.
I have found
that USB tends to tax the computer more. It makes the computer do more work.
Yeah, the way I understand it, FireWire is actually built for sustained transfers, whereas USB is built to do big bursts of data and then stop, and then another big burst and then stop. So overall, FireWire at the same or even slightly slower speed, right? Because FireWire 400, I think, is faster than USB at 440 or whatever that were, 480, I guess is what that works out.
So I'm still learning, you know, about drivers and stuff like that. But from a few folks I spoke to asking about that, they said, yeah, well, USB, they make you do more work in the computer itself. So
makes sense. Yeah.
Anyways.
Our second sponsor for this show is Audible. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, not only do you get signed up for a 2-week free trial of Audible Listener Gold, but you also get one free book download. Now, Audible lets you download audiobooks that you can play on your computer, on your iPod. You can burn them to CD. You can pretty much listen to them on almost any device you can connect to your computer. So Audible and your Kindle, even you can listen to them. audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab. John, do you, you have a book recommendation for us this week? I think.
Yep. And this is just a crowd pleaser, I think. Myself.
I know where it's going. That's why I have to laugh.
The Shining, by Stephen King. So, they have this. It was actually nominated for a 2005 Audi Award for solo narration, but some of you may read the book, but you, maybe you want to listen to it. So it says here, published in 1977, The Shining quickly became a benchmark in the literary career of Stephen King, this tale of a troubled man hired to care for a remote mountain resort over the winter. His loyal wife and their uniquely gifted son slowly but steadily unfolds as secrets from the Overlook Hotel's past are revealed. You get it. And if you've seen the film, you remember the... You know, the nice scene of, here's Johnny. I can say that without having to pay a royalty, right?
If you can't, we got to just shut the whole thing down. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson did a pretty nice job of playing a very, very scary guy. So, yeah.
Not to draw this out too much, but when you were telling me about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I thought of another one of my favorite Nicholson movies, which was also a fantastic book. But it was a tough book to read, and that was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The book, the movie was fantastic in its own right, but is completely different from the book. I'm not going to say that it's better or worse. It's one of those books that translated to movies and did very well. But the book is written from the point of view of the Indian chief, or the Indian named chief.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it's a very, very strange read. However, the condensed Audible book might be the absolute perfect way to kind of grok that angle of the story without having to read through every word of the Indian chief. Not that King Kesey did a bad job, but it is a read at which one has to work. And I think the Audible version of that might be fantastic. So again, audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab. You get the 14-day free trial of Audible Listener Gold, one free download. You do have to provide a credit card to sign up. However, anything you download, if you cancel your membership before the 2 weeks, you pay nothing and you keep everything and can still play it, can still use it. It's all good. So that's Audible Listener Gold. audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab. We're going to get into listener tips, and John, I'm going to slip a kind of sort of surprise one in here. You know how we've been talking about, we've been ranting, you've heard me rant about, how can I find out what time machine backed up? Well, Kevin wrote in and pointed us to a post on the Mackinnon forums where Charles Soft, or the Charles from Charles Soft, posted a link to a utility called, I can't find it, it's Time Tracker. And we'll post a link to the Time Tracker and to the Mackinnon forum post. It's not really officially a live thing, but because he feels like it needs some more work on the interface. But I used it, and I know John is telling you, you're telling me that you tried it and it didn't work. But
I'm impatient sometimes. I'll try to fire it up. Okay. I'll see what's in front of me. And if I can't click or do anything that makes anything interesting happen, I'm like, okay, the interface needs work, which it sounds like is what you just said.
Right. Yeah. So I did. I tried it. It was a little weird because it asked me for the password for my time machine to access the drive on my time. It's on my time capsule, which I gave it. And then it took a little while. And then in the interface, I got a list of all of the machines that are backed up to the time capsule. And you could choose a machine, choose a drive, and then you've got a, actually, I guess you choose a machine and then you choose a backup set, and it shows you all the backup sets that are out there. So, you know, one per month for the old stuff, one per week for the medium stuff, one per day, and then one per hour, right? It was perfect. I clicked on one. It showed me exactly what was being backed up. On my machines, the thing that is constantly being backed up are the slices for my iDisk, my local copy of my iDisk. Now, why these are changing constantly when I'm not changing content on my iDisk, that's a whole other story. But at least now I know what Time Machine is backing up. So for me, Time Tracker worked flawlessly. A little bumpy, but no actual problems. One thing, though, you need to, once you quit Time Tracker, so I guess maybe here is the flaw, right? you need to then go and eject. I had four drives to eject from my Finder because there were four machines that are being backed up to the time capsule. I had to go eject all those, and then Time Machine worked fine after that. So Time Tracker answers that. Is it perfect? No. Is it the best thing that's available? Without question. No question about it. So that's my yay. Thank you.
It brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah, it does.
Well, just how our listeners just listen.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Charles.
And give back to the to everybody else. That's awesome. Thank you.
Speaking of giving back, last week we mused about printing out your startup shortcuts so that you could have them available before you knew that you needed them. Mm. And Gerard wrote in and pointed us to a site that has a PDF that's perfect. You print out the PDF and fold it up, and it creates this little startup shortcut booklet that's totally perfect. So we'll link to that. It's at creativetext.com, but we'll link to the full URL in the show notes here. That's already in the show notes. I pre-populated it, so you don't even have to wait till the end of the week when John gets them all up. It's already there. So it should be right here in the AAC. And the AAC, of course, is courtesy of Michael Johnston from iPhone Alley, and you still have time. This will be the last Mac Geek Gab podcast before July 11th when the iPhone 3G comes out, and they're running a contest over there. So check it out at iPhoneAlley.com. Thanks, Michael.
Nice.
Yeah. Time to listen to Hank, John?
Can I?
Talk. Go. Yeah.
Well, I was going to wag my finger at Apple, but...
Go wag.
Their docs weren't... I'm hoping maybe it was in the latest update today, but we noted that their help text isn't always up to date with the OS feature.
Yeah, so. Good luck with that.
but actually, no, I will, in their defense and Microsoft as well, because I use both of course. But they do link to the help systems tend to now link to the internet as well to find things, and those tend to be current. So I will unwag my finger. I've seen both. You may not find it in the online help or the on disk help, but if you're connected to a network connection, then you usually get something.
I've
noticed this. Have you?
I've had a really long day, and it's been a relatively good day, but it's been really long. And and you just gave me the laugh that I needed. You said you were going to unwag your finger. How do you do that?
You'll just have to come over and watch or get a webcam.
Yeah, well, those, I got one. Let's fire it up right in Skype right now. We can get the webcams going. You can show me how to unwag one's finger. This is is quality stuff here, folks.
All right, who's next?
Okay, it's Hank.
Hank?
Yeah.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Hank from Mountain View, California. I'm calling about episode 157 and the emailer who had a dead battery after leaving his MacBook in sleep unplugged for more than a month. I read something online a while back that said that doing that would, in fact, kill your battery so dead that it's not recoverable. This was particularly unfortunate to me because at the time I read that, I had my MacBook in exactly that state and discovered that, yes, indeed, my battery was dead, would not take a charge no matter what I did. So I went to my local Apple store, made an appointment at the Genius Bar. And the fellow behind the counter determined that, yes, indeed, the battery was dead, filled out a little paperwork, and gave me a brand new one. I hope your emailer has an Apple store nearby and a genius behind the desk who is as kind and considerate as mine was. Good luck to him, and good luck to you guys.
Batteries, batteries, batteries. You know, we also got an email that said... I believe came from something somewhere official that Apple had published that said, even if someone has AppleCare, the battery is not covered past the end of the first year, regardless. I am a living testament to that being the opposite. Pilot Pete, I think you too, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Me too. About 2 months ago. It just wouldn't hold a charge anymore, and there's you qualify for a new battery using the coconut battery.
Yep.
Utility said those numbers don't work. You need a new battery.
So
it was there the next day.
Okay, and
so
okay.
I think the message is.
And so John, you too, did you say that you are a living testament to that policy.
Well,
not-
I had there was a recall for the PowerBook.
True.
G4 batteries as well, but I think a lot of companies want to be careful with any sort of battery issues.
Yes.
So,
yeah. So it
as
doesn't.
Long as you're not a jerk.
Right. I think
and just be civil. They'll take care of you. The geniuses or just Apple in general, I think, does a pretty good job of that.
I think it is probably true that they have this policy so that they can fall back on it at the 2 year and 363 day mark. If somebody's being a jerk and has a battery that's 10% off of the, the deal, so that they're covered. But yeah, certainly it's not the norm. They will cover it if it falls off, some benchmark. So
yeah, and as somebody pointed out, there they are. We'll dig around a bit, but they every now and then they'll have return programs for all sorts of components, mostly batteries, but other sort of things. And I think they'll take care of you.
Yeah,
they have with all of us, right?
They have, and I mean, I certainly didn't play the do you know who I am card, because if I did, they'd just hang up. So
yeah, I would. Now, should we talk about the mic? No.
Pete's advice is don't take no as a final answer. Escalate it. Be nice, but escalate it up to the relative supervisors if you feel like, you think that there might be a better resolution. So be nice, though. Be nice.
Now, here
if mom says no, ask dad.
If mom says no, ask dad. There you go. Perfect.
A good suggestion. Yes. Take multiple stabs at them. One's bound to succeed. But I'm gonna unwag my finger because for battery to rewag whatever you want.
A battery.
I've seen lots of batteries last. To me, it's just inconceivable. I just watched the movie. Sorry, but
nice.
That a battery just because it sits around for a while is all of a sudden no longer viable. So I've used we've all used many other devices that have rechargeable batteries. Now, sure. I guess, computer batteries have special requirements as far as the current and the power that they have to provide and stuff like that. But still, for a battery, just because you ignore it for a little while, does it get really depressed and just stop working? It just doesn't seem right that there may be a way to jumpstart it. And I don't know. I suspect that I don't know if it's the chip in the because all the batteries have some sort of chip reporting what the battery thinks about the world.
Right.
And I don't know if it just gets below a certain point where that chip just says, okay, I give up. You're almost dead. So I'm going to pretend that you don't exist.
I bet that's what it is. Clearly the cores don't all die 100% at that point. Right. So it's gotta be that there's, it's gotta be the circuitry on the battery says, call it quits and ne'er the two shall meet. So
I'm speculating, and I suspect out of all the listeners, somebody knows more than we do about this. And but I've never seen a battery unless the battery has been charged and discharged so many times, because we've seen that. If you look in the system profiler or other battery utilities, they will now, and actually I think Apple has brought this information forward, they will tell you the cycles, the charge and recharge cycles on the battery. And the health, which is a difference between the maximum and the capacity now. So, but I can't imagine unless you get that figure down to nothing. That I could understand. If the battery is almost, dead anyways, then the chip in the battery says, you're done. But if it's a battery that's fairly new, which it sounds like at least in Robert's case it was, then I can't understand why it would, bring itself all the way to non-existence.
I agree. Yeah, that. It doesn't make sense, but it's good to know. At least now we know that that's how they're engineered. So don't let that happen. Right. Can we rewag our fingers now, John?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
It's your finger.
Anner, I believe Honor writes in a recent Mac Geek Cab. Dave was talking about how to find the 10 last change files in a directory via the terminal command ls. There is, in my opinion, a far more powerful way with the command find. You can do things such as, and I'll say this out loud, but it's already printed in the show notes. So find space tilde space dash newer CT space quote, 120 minute ago, quote, space dash print, which prints all the changed files within the last 2 hours in your home directory. Yeah, it's true, man. And thank you for sending this in. The find command rocks. It's so ridiculously powerful that it scares the life out of me because I'm always afraid I'm going to do something wrong with it. but it's true. You can find just about anything with it. And I don't think it uses FS events to do this. I think it's just doing it the old Unix way, if you will. So there's probably an even cooler way of doing this by setting FS events to watch a certain group of files and then, you know, just pulling data from them. But I'm no coder, so, you know, and I don't think there's an Apple scriptable way to talk to FS events. So there you go. But that's a very cool thing. And if you do a man space find, you can begin to scratch the surface of what find can do. But there's so much more about it, as Honor points out. So thank you. And that, nice. That's in the show notes. That will be there for eternity, or, you know, at least until somebody shuts the site down.
Or the drive crashes, you know.
Pete, you guys are really helping make my day here. Pete writes, find space home space open quote, the meaning of life close quote. So I don't know how find is going to deal with that, but it would be very cool if it returned 42.
You said it was powerful. I just, you know,
much appreciated. Yes.
So tips, if you have a tip, especially if you have a tip, maybe an audio tip, if you say what you think about the show, that's almost a guaranteed way to get. Oh, sorry.
It's a guaranteed way to get what?
Well, to get us to listen to it. And
of course we listen. We try to listen to everything. It the last couple of weeks, you know, my travel schedule always screws me up and I'll wind up having trips back to back like I am now. You know, I was at WWDC and now I've got this vacation coming up, which isn't truly back to back, but there's been enough going on in between that I'm still not caught up with all the audio comments. A lot of you got emails from me last night as I was going through your stuff, and I can't promise that that's going to get a whole lot better until perhaps you know, July 15th ish. But we do make sure to read and or listen to just about everything that comes through, if not everything that comes through. So that's how we roll. And speaking of rolling, here comes the band.
Nice.
Yep.
So, yeah, on the 4th. So, the 4th is coming up.
Of course, you refer to the 4th of July, which, for our non-U.S. listeners that don't know, is Independence Day here in America. And
yeah, and we celebrate by blowing things up.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, we're going to be out on the lake, so we get to watch fireworks from the boat.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. And if anybody's in Connecticut or nearby and you want to, you know, check out some fireworks by the beach, let me know.
There you go.
Have a little cookout.
Cool. I wish I could come. Now, see, you're creating a Geek Gab event and I can't go. I'd love to go.
It's not a Geek Gab event. If anybody happens to be in Connecticut, you know. Let me know. It's a... No, I'm on a pretty nice location.
Yeah, you're real close to the beach there. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, and actually you can see all the fireworks surrounding, not just here, but the other towns on the Sound, I guess.
Can you see the fireworks right from your deck there?
No.
Okay.
No, if I go into the attic... I tried the first year I moved into the place. I went into the... but, you know, the attic's not really a fun place to hang out. But, you know,
get the saws all out and carve a hole in the roof there?
No. Well, actually, my neighbors did do a little add-on to their place, but they didn't, you know, go higher, just
right,
wider.
Ah, okay.
But, no, I prefer to walk down, you know, where everybody else is.
Got it.
Or they have some parks on the way there. If you set up some beach chairs or something, you can get most of the fireworks. But it's cool because once you're on the water, all the other towns that are doing it, you can see all of them. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. All right.
Yep, but
so,
of course, the barbecue, you know, got to fire up the Weber, right?
Of course. That's right. Absolutely. iPhoneAlley.com. We already talked about it. You can listen to the iPhone Alley podcast. Of course, that also includes Michael Johnston, the gracious fellow who converts this to AAC for you and for us. CashFly Hosting, of course, provides all the bandwidth for you to download this show at super fast speeds. The podcast marketplace this month includes the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit and Yojimbo from Barebone Software, Page Sender from Smile on My Mac, and I think they might have a special event coming up, Conference Quarter from Ecamm, the free book from audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, and of course, harman-etravel.com for all your travel needs. That's all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, of which we're happy to be a member, by the way. And we love the iTunes comments. Thank you for the anniversary gift of breaking 200. That actually meant quite a bit to John and I. So thanks to all of you who participated, and even thanks to those of you who considered participating. That's it's the thought that counts, right? That's how we roll here. You got anything else before we get out of here, John?
Well, a little bit, you know, and it'll lead into our closing remark, of course. But I saw a little thing on, I don't know if you watched the Colbert Report.
Oh, yeah.
But he was talking about, apparently, your state seems to allow the selling of things that go boom.
We allow some fireworks. It's not like it was when I lived in Texas.
But there's a little nanny state to the south of you that tends to not enjoy that sort of thing.
Most of them to the south of us, until you get very far south of New Hampshire. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know, is it Massachusetts, I think? So,
yeah.
No, but they had a little piece there, and apparently, some people hang out on the border. To
right.
Look for the evil people coming back with the fireworks from New Hampshire. So I don't see, why are you guys contributing to this sort of delinquency? I mean, come on.
See, the thing you have to understand is they sit on the border waiting for the people to buy cheap liquor in New Hampshire and bring it across state lines, and then they charge them extra tax, or dump it out on the bridge.
Or confiscate it. Right.
Yeah. They confiscate. Yeah. They
know about that.
Yeah, I think we better get out of here before we get in trouble.
I don't know.
Maybe we're past that
may.
Point.
Yeah. Even though I don't want to. Well, I could sync it with the. Yeah, we could babble incoherently, but I think we may. Just in fact.